Once again, this week, we have the privilege of reading a double parsha, Acher Mos Kedoshim, this week, as we are, approaching Shavuos, as some of the parshas begin to get, doubled up as the calendar falls its way out. This week, we get the chance to learn Acher Mos and Kedoshim. So let's quickly overview a little bit of Acher Mos, a little bit of both of the parshios. Acher Mos begins, Vaydabar Shal Moshe Acher Mos Shnei B'nei Aaron. After the death of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, that was in Parsha Shmini, we know about the death of Nadav and Avihu. They brought the fire, the Esh Zara, that they weren't supposed to bring. They are killed. So the Torah tells us, "Bekarvasal v'nei Hashem v'yamusu." So after that death, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, daber Aaron achicha v'yavo b'chol eis el kodesh." You can't just come whenever you want into the kodesh. Mi beis la paroches al pnei akaporos asharon v'lo yamus ki b'noi erel la kaporos. You can't just walk in. So why does God say this? Why is this after the death of Aaron's sons? You should know you can't just come on in. So Rashi explains that perhaps the Torah here is trying to tell us that you shouldn't die as they died. And the Rebbeinu Bachya as well. The Rebbeinu Bachya says because it's like a doctor that comes in and he tells somebody, don't eat this kind of thing. Don't act in this kind of way. Don't eat the certain food. And then another doctor comes in and says the same things. Right, if you go to the doctor, the doctor says, listen, you want to lose weight, so don't eat this, exercise like that, and leaves it. Another doctor could say, don't eat this, exercise like that, so that you end up like that guy, or that you don't end up like that guy. You can figure out which guy you are. So Rabbeinu Bachya is saying, Hashem's telling Aaron, in order that you don't succumb to the same fate as the sons of Nadav and Avihu, as the sons of Aaron, don't do such a thing. But there's another understanding to Vayavo Bichol Eis El HaKodesh. Like, let's understand for a minute. Right? If we want to, the whole sin of Aaron's sons was that they felt a little bit too close to God. Right? So close that they would just waltz on in, offer a sacrifice to God that he didn't ask for. And in fact, some suggest that they actually intuited what God wanted from them. That was on a very, very high level. But that's the problem. Vayavo b'chol eis el ha-kodesh means if you want to approach God and holiness, then preparation and training are necessary. Here we have two individuals that might have been, in a sense, they took their relationship, their closeness with God for granted. So they nonchalantly entered the Mishkan. All right, we need to remain spiritually awake to the wonder of the world. And it's very difficult. All right, those living thousands of years ago had live miracles. They lived in the Beis HaMikdash. They saw these things. They reminded of God's presence. And even then they had a difficult time. Even then Yeshaya would tell them, don't go in the same gate and leave the same gate of the Beis HaMikdash. You need to make it fresh and new. You need to understand that walking in to the Beis HaMikdash, approaching God, is an awe-inspiring experience. And if we don't realize that, we take it, we take it for granted. Even today. So leaving aside the debate, whether or not one can enter into the Beis HaMikdash, the Har HaBayis today. Should you go? Should you not go? And even if you do go, you have to be very careful about how you go and where you walk. And those that go, there is a halacha called Mora B'Mikdash. When you go into Har HaBayis, there are certain laws that you have to be careful about. How you act, what you do, how you talk. You were in awe and in reverence of this place. You treated it with that sanctity, that Kedusha. So you have to be careful. You have to go to the mikvah. That's Mora B'Mikdash. Right? Part of our struggle sometimes with davening, with shul, is we sometimes don't treat it with as much of the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses. It has to hold a certain, I'm walking into this, to this meeting with God. That's the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses. So Nadav and Avihu took for granted sort of this message. There's an amazing idea of Rav Kook. But we know that the bracha we make of when a person survives a dangerous situation is Hagomel. Hagomel l'chavim tavosh like malani koto. Now, that bracha, it got a lot of fanfare for the last few months. The big shiloh of a person, gets corona and then he gets better. Should he say Hagomel? Should he not say Hagomel? How bad was it? How do you know when you're fully better? Because Hagomel, a person has a surgery, for example, they say Hagomel after the surgery, but they know that the surgery is completed How do you know when you're, people have ailments from corona for months and months? All right, that's the bracha of Hagomel. You know, it's often a shaila. Now, people will say, Rabbi, I was almost in a very dangerous situation. So almost being in a dangerous situation is not Hagomel, but I was in a dangerous situation, and you would bench Hagomel. So, but the words Hagomel l'chayavim tovo shegmolani kol tov means who bestows good on the guilty. On the guilty. This guilt, now remember, there's four people that had to say Gomel. Saved from an illness, crossed the wilderness, an ocean, or released from prison. Right? Now later we said it for a lot of other things. But what does it mean guilty? What's it guilty for? A guy crossed the sea, was very dangerous, he survives. Thank you, Hashem. Maybe he sings the song, thank you, Hashem, but that's what he's doing. So says Rav Kook. Rav Kook said that this bracha is meant as a reality check. That all four of these situations mentioned by the Gemara, where a person was taken out of their routine, they were taken out of their routine, and they recognized how remarkable regular routine life is. So the guy who went on the sea and is now back on dry land is confronted with, oh my gosh, the sea is a crazy place. I can't believe I survived that. Thank you, Hashem. I'm almost shaken out of my routine to realize that God is protecting me. But you cross the wilderness, you appreciate the beauty of living in a society. You recover from illness. Right? We just went through a year of this, of appreciation of simple health. Person released from jail can, presumably was, incarcerated because of something else, experienced the horrible conditions and realized what a great life to have, law and order. And now that's what we're guilty of. We're guilty of only of not appreciating that God has runs our lives, a certain sense of security, a certain sense of comfortability. And Vayava Bechol Eisel HaKodesh, he's saying life creates routine, habit-forming ways. But we also have to take that opportunity to thank Hashem for those, for those moments. So that's Vayava Bechol Eisel HaKodesh. We can't get too comfortable. It's, I can tell that as a teacher and as a Rebbe, this is often a very difficult balance I personally struggle with all the time. How close are you with students? Is there a line in which gets blurred? And that's sometimes that happens. You want to maintain a reverence and an awe. That's what we want with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our friend. He's our confidant. We talk to him. We relate to him. But that's Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. I love God and I confide in him and I talk to him and I daven to him and I share with him what's happening in my life. But at the same time, I also have in reverence that God is a Kadosh Baruch. Okay. So realizing at the same time that this understanding of Acharei Mos Shnei B'nei Aharon, the death of Aaron's sons, that's the connection really between the death of the righteous. So I read this parasha on Yom Kippur, that the death of the tzaddikim brings with it a certain kapara. So I read the story of the Asar Harugei Malchus, right, the 10 martyrs. We read it twice. Once on Tisha B'Av to, elicit that mourning, that sadness, that tragedy, a terrible, terrible murder of the greatest of the greats of the Tanayim, the great Gedolim that lived during the time period of the Romans. And we read on Yom Kippur because it gets Kapara. And I don't think in any year, any 4 or 5 months in which we can understand that the death of Tzaddikim brings with it a certain sense of Kapara has been the lives that, the last few months that we lived through. The loss of great gedolim, from last summer of Rabbi Lam and Rabbi Steinsaltz and Rabbi David Soloveitchik, Rabbi David Lichtenstein and Rabbi Dayudov Schwartz and Rabbi Shiner, and I mean it's today in our eighth grade class, one of our students were giving pitches for graduation speeches, and one of the eighth graders spoke about all the gedolim that have died this past year and what she's learned from them. That's, that's this Acharei Mos Shnei B'nei Aharon, the loss of Gedolim, the loss of Gedolim. And I think that it should motivate us to, when we can meet Gedolim, interact with Gedolim, we should go to them. We should make those chances. I've shared a little bit that right before Pesach, in Hillel Torah every year, we bring in a posek. We bring in a posek to answer Shilos for our students, Pesach related. So usually when it was before Corona, I was somebody local, a local, Orthodox rabbi. And then, last year on Zoom, we brought somebody in from Rabbi Shoshan from Phoenix. And this year we said, let's ask Rav Schechter. Schechter is one of the Gedolim. So we emailed Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter said, in classic Rav Schechter humility, of course, not a problem. So Rav Schechter, for 45 minutes, Rav Schechter answered Pesach questions from sixth to eighth graders at Hillel Torah. And I told my students, we prepared, they asked the questions, they came to the camera, I shared with them how to ask a question to a gadol. They heard me talking in third person to Rav Schechter. I said, you know, does the Rav have time? And and most of us didn't understand half the things Rav Schechter was saying because it's rapid fire. And my eighth graders, I was in the room with my eighth graders, and my eighth graders sat there, jaw dropped. Now, these are eighth graders that when I'm teaching them, after 42 seconds, have 18 different things to tell me and, you know, derail our class. They sat there and I said to them, Rav Schechter, he doesn't have notes in front of him. We didn't send him the questions, and he just Gemaras, Rishonim, Achronim, what daf, what sefer. I looked around to them and they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. And at one point, it was about 20 minutes in, I said to Rav Schechter, does Rebbe have more time? Of course. I'm not giving a share for another hour. That's what it means to be a gadol, to find gadolim, interact with gadolim, because when they're not in our midst, we realize the tremendous loss of gadolim, and that's Achrei Mos Shnei Bnei Aharon. Obviously, Parshas Achrei Mos continues and focuses on the process of what happened on the Avodah Yom Kippur, right? The two goats, and as reverse says, that these two goats were very similar. Right? They took the two goats, the Daf Yomi is up to Masechtas Yuma. The two goats stood right next to the Kohen, and each one of these goats were exactly similar. One goat, though, would be offered the blood sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and one goat would be thrown off the cliff. And Rav Hirsch says, because each one of us has the power to make decisions. When we talk about Shuvah, for example, we all have the power to do whatever we want, however we want. We can change. The belief in free will is the idea of Shuvah, that I could change, I can fix, I can change a habit, a routine, a pathology. I can do that. And Rav Hirsch said these two goats were so similar, and yet one is offered directly in the holiest place in the world, and one goat is thrown off the cliff. And Rav Hirsch says it's absurd, he says, to say that the ability to sin and the temptations are only consequences of man's degeneration. That without the ability to sin, man ceases to be man. He says, no, we have the ability to change. And these goats, we can decide if we are Hashem or we are La'azazel. And Rabbi Soloveitchik makes an astonishing suggestion. Rabbi Soloveitchik says that when we offer this carbon, La'azazel, we throw it off the cliff to the Satan. What we're really saying is, throughout this past year, I have made a lot of sacrifices, but not all of those sacrifices were made for the right reason. And the Rav says that we're racked with guilt and we're sorry. And we're saying that I want to take all the sacrifices that I didn't make in the right direction, and I want to, devote them completely to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the whole process of the Avodah. But the process of the Avodah was meant, obviously, as a spiritual awakening, as somebody would be motivated, they would see what was happening, they would internally look at themselves. The next parshas Kedoshim mentions of a lashon hara. That was one of the sins that the blood sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim got atonement for. So watching this process on Yom Kippur, watching what happened and understanding, the different, very busy day of the Kohen Gadol, but all with the goal of motivating us to create a deeper relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just in my relationship of saying I'm sorry, but looking back and saying, what were the sacrifices that I made that were Azazel sacrifices, right? What were things that I went above and beyond and went, really crazy about? And it was good. I did a lot. But how can I devote that energy and that the fullness of who I am towards God and towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Towards the end of Parshas Achrei Mos, there is a pasuk, and I want to share with you an idea of Rabbi Lamb. And I think this is something that is when I read it a number of years ago, was really mind-blowing for me. So the pasuk tells us the following. The pasuk says that Kemaseh Eretz Mitzrayim, The pasuk at the end of Parashat Achrima is Perek Yud Ches pasuk Gimel. Kemasei Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yashavtem Bo Lo Sa'asu. Don't be like the Egyptians. Uchemasei Eretz Kenan. And the practice is don't do the practice of Kenan Asher Ani Mevi Aschem Shama Lo Sa'asu. Uvuchukoseyem Lo Sa'asu. Don't go in their ways. God warns the Jews that we shouldn't act like they did in Egypt or like they're doing in Canaan. But what should we do? Right? If I tell you, don't do this thing, I should probably tell you what that thing is. It's very bad directions if you're just generalized. Well, you need to be better. You know, like that doesn't help me. Tell me exactly what I need to fix and I'll try to fix it. Right? If you were giving out, if you're a doctor and you're like, all right, something's wrong with you, that doesn't really help. I'm not probably going to go back to that doctor. So it says, don't be like Canaan. Don't be like Mitzrayim. All right. So give me some details. It's possible, says the Ramban and others, that it refers to a certain inappropriate, promiscuous way of living, that these cultures were vulgar and lewd and terrible. So don't be like them. But Rabbi Lam suggests something different. And he quotes Joseph Wood Crutch, who was an American writer, who famously analyzed the difference in terms that we use all the time. He called these terms normal and average. Normal and average. Now, my father-in-law is a psychiatrist, and my father-in-law always says that normal is only a cycle on the washing machine. You can't say somebody is normal. Okay, so we use the terms normal and average. But he says we make an error. That we identify the normal with the average. That we believe what most people do must be right. When we say, right, I want my kid, I want my job, I want my this to be normal. What we're really saying is, I don't want my child to stand out too, don't be too sporty and don't be too bookish. Don't be too intellectual and don't be too simple. Be average, just be normal, right? Just be normal. I'm sure we've all used those terms in some way, but he says, Joseph Wood Crutch, he says that it confuses, that confusing normal and average is very bad. And explains Rabbi Lam, it's a big mistake. Because he says average is a description of what is, but normal is the ideal, the principle, what it should be. Only in a perfect world, the average is normal. In a perfect world, the average is normal. But in real life, the average is usually far below normal. And that's the Torah is telling us. Look around, the Torah says, two of the largest influences in the world, Egypt and Canaan, you don't get bigger than the seven nations of Israel, than the largest empire of Mitzrayim. But realize that just because they're doing it, that just makes it average. It doesn't make it normal. Their practices, their way of life, their philosophy, their attitude, whatever that is, it's average, but it's not normal. And in fact, Rashi, when describing these two nations, Rashi says, "Magid shemaseyim shel mitzrim shel kenanim," that their actions mikalkalim mikol umos, they are the most destructive. "V'yoso makom sheyashvbo Yisrael mikukol min hakol," they are the most disgusting. And yet, we were placed there in Mitzrayim, near Canaan, and in Canaan. That even if we live in a world where the average is low, where the practices of so many are bad, many people are still going to follow that average. But it's just average. It's not normal. It's not normal. When you begin to characterize average as normal, then even the worst among the nations seem normal and seem accepted. I ran this past week in my class, actually. I ran this exercise in which I asked some of my students, all anonymous, it's a poll everywhere, it's on the board, so no one can see, you know, it doesn't have any names. And it asked them a series of questions. It asked them, like, you know, are you careful with X, Y, and Z? Do you know, how do you see yourself? All these different questions. And one of the questions was, out of like a certain amount of mitzvos, how many of them do we do on an average basis? And then one question was, how do I see my religious life? Do I see my religious life as good? I'm good now, but I could do more, or I think there's more I have to do. And then one question was, in 4 years when I'm graduating high school, I want to be as religious or more religious than I am now. So whatever the answers were, but I said to them, here's the data. The data is, we might not have done all of those 10 mitzvos, But we also know that I want my religion to be better. So we have to get better at them. So why aren't we better at them? And they had a lot of interesting things to say. And one of the things that they said was the average and the normal. What do you mean, Rabbi? This is just what we see. This is just what we experience. It seems to me that this is the average. So I said to them, right, it's average, but it's not normal. It's not normal. And that's, we all suffer from this problem, right? We live in a country where everyone wants to feel like they're the person in charge. There's a lot of freedom, so much independence that being subservient to God seems difficult. It seems difficult. And that's the next Yupsukim tell us what is normal. So what's normal? Es mishpatai tasu, veschu kosai tishmoru. You'll follow my mitzvos. You'll do them. Olech zomani Hashem. And says Rabbi Lam, that's the normal. What's the normal thing to do? Shemartim eschu kosai, ves mishpatai. Be normal. Daven, learn, keep kosher. Those are the things that we have to make our normal the average. We have to raise our average. We have to, you know, suggest to Ibn Ezra. Now when the Pasuk says, kema'asei, and then it says, v'chu kosayim, what does that mean? Shelo yargil adam lech v'derech hazeh. Don't do these things until it becomes standard. The Torah doesn't want our low level to become a standard. As long as we understand that there's a normal that I'm striving for, that there's a more improvement that I want to be at, that I want to strive to be normal, that's the goal. It's an unbelievable idea of Rabbi Lam. It's an unbelievable idea of Rabbi Lam. Don't confuse the average and the normal. And I think often today, it's not that we confuse the average and the normal. We have decided on our own what is normal. We've created our many, many slices of orthodoxy that what I am going to defend what I do as my orthodoxy. So my orthodoxy looks like X, Y, or Z, and it doesn't involve, you know, let's say three times a day with a minyan. It doesn't involve a certain level of standard of kashrus. There might be exceptions. I have work and I have this and I, of course, what's the normal? What are we striving for? What are our goals? As long as I understand that even if I can't do the full, I know that there is something I'm aiming for. And that's the goal of the Torah. It's an amazing story that during the second Intifada, a student in the Gush had subscribed to the Jerusalem Post. They wanted to stay on top of the, you know, the events and the news. And in the Gush, the mailbox was right next to the Chadar Ocha, right next to the Chadar Ocha where everybody would eat. So, you know, some students who didn't subscribe would, while they're waiting to get their food, they would take the paper, they'd read the paper, they put it back in the guy's box. Brilliant yeshiva move, right? I get to read the paper and I don't have to pay for it, right? That guy's going to go on to do big things. So one day, somebody posted a sign asking people, don't take this without permission because it's crinkling the paper. You're crinkling my paper. I subscribed to the Jerusalem Post. You didn't. Please don't read it. Okay. And I'm sure you could pick somebody in your own circle that would have done that. Okay. Maybe it's you. I have no idea. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein calls an emergency sichas musr, like an emergency, like musr session, musr speech. And he quotes the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, right? Shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalcha. If I say what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Some say that's a midos sedom, and some say it's beinoni. It's being average. And Rav Aaron was visibly upset, and he took the sign that was on the mailbox, and he holds it up, and he says, are we striving to be beinonim? Is this what we're striving to be? We're striving to be average. All right, that's mine. It's my paper. Leave it alone. Get your own paper. I'm not taking your paper. That would be wrong. That's average. Mine is mine. What's yours is yours. He says that we're aiming to be. And Rav Aaron's point was there are many mitzvos in the parish about holiness. Kedusha is where we want it to be. To not to be average, but to be normal. Not to be what is, but what should be. And it's no shock that this is the parsha we read on Yom Kippur. Why do we choose Acharei Mos to read on Yom Kippur? Because on the holiest day of the year, we take stock and tell God, I'm apologizing for being average. And I'm promising to be normal. I'm promising to raise my average. Wherever my average and normal can be the same. Where we're honest with ourselves, what we need to do with the struggle that we have. And that's okay. That we understand that we understand that we're not okay with just being average, that we want to be normal. I think it is such a powerful, powerful idea of Rabbi Lam. I think it flies in the face of the culture in which we live, both in the world at large, but sometimes within our own orthodoxy, to understand that there is a level of a threshold that we're trying to get to as a community, as a community. You know, I teach Hilchos Shabbos in eighth grade. And at the beginning of each melacha, I tell my students, listen, there are some things that we're going to learn that you might not do at home. Don't ever go home and tell your family you can't do this, Rabbi Liebteig said. First of all, I will flat out deny it. And now you will look bad and I will, of course, look good. But the real reason is, as long as we understand that we're striving to get to a threshold, what's the baseline? What's the normal that we want within everything? What's the normal we want within our community in terms of Lashon Hara, in terms of communal norms, in terms of using our tzibor to raise that average to a place where we're not striving to be beinonim? You know, the Gemara tells us that on Aseres Yemei Teshuva, there's three books, the Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Mesim, and the beinonim, the ones in between. So Bernard Weinberger says, one second, there's a book that's only open for 10 days. I get it. I get it. That book, who's going to live, who's going to die? You're telling me there's a third book that just gets open 10 days out of the year? Doesn't make sense. And he explained it's not true. The Sefer Beinonim is where people are the whole year. The whole year they live average. They live not too passionate, not too apathetic, not too excited. I'm not too timid. I'm in the middle. You know, I don't put that much effort in, but I don't put no effort in. I stay in the middle. And it's a lifestyle. Being a Beinoni is being a lifestyle. And our goal is to raise that. So my father-in-law asked, don't tell him that I said it's okay to be normal. But the idea is that we're raising ourselves to the level where there's a norm. And that norm, even if it doesn't look average, is what we're striving to maintain. Parshas Kedoshim, as we continue, teaches us a lot about Kedusha. The pasuk, the opening psukka of Kedoshim, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemer Daber Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael Ve'amarta Aleihem Kedoshim Ti, you should be holy, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeich. So let's just understand for a second, what does this mean? There's a lot to unpack in these first few psukim. Notice, Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Now, usually, the way a mitzvah was taught was there was a process, Moshe to Aaron, and so on. It's all the way down the line. But here, Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, everyone was invited. Why is that? So there's a number of reasons. Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi explains, one of the super commentators, Rashi, that we wanted to minimize any mistakes in transmission. Moshe directly to the people. But Rav Kleinim is Kalman Epstein, was known as the Maor V'Shemesh. Maor V'Shemesh, he was the Talmud of the Rav Elimelech of Lezhensk, one of the great founders and movers of the Hasidic movement. And Rav Kalman, Kleinemus Kalman Epstein lived 1753 to 1825. And he says, because alone time is very good, right? We know you should have your special alone time. We talked about this the other week. It's spododos, having a private time, connecting with God. But you need a community. You need a community. And on that note, there are ways we go about Kedusha. Right, the Rambam says that if you have nowhere to live, you can't find a good city, then live in the forest. Go somewhere else where no one will influence you bad. But that's only so I won't be influenced bad. But if I want to be influenced for good, to become a great person and a great, and have a relationship with God and be more Shomer Torah mitzvos that have been part of my life, I need a community. I need people in my life helping me and guiding me and motivating me. And that needs called Adas B'nei Yisrael. You can't achieve Kedusha without a community. You cannot sin without a community. But to achieve that high level of Kedusha, that needs a community. But the Alshech HaKadosh, Moshe Alshech, lived in the 1500s in Spain. The Alshech, who was born originally in Turkey, later eventually moved to Spain, was a student of Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. The Alshech HaKadosh would give drushos, and they were remarkable, remarkable drushos. And these are what we have, the Alshech's commentary on the Torah. And he says, we're not equal on roles, right? There's Kohanim. I'm a Kohen, some of you might not be Kohanim. Everybody's got a different role in that regard. But in our relationship with God, everyone is equal. Every single person is equal. That's Kedusha. Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. You know what it means to achieve Kedusha? Every single person can do it. It is not relegated to Gedolim. You know, one of the great things of having Rav Schechter on the Zoom was that the next day we were like getting, you know, preparing, you know, for Pesach and our, you know, in our halacha class. And I have all bar mitzvah boys. So I said to them, you know that your observance of these mitzvahs, of matzah, of moror, charoses, you have the same chiyuv as Rav Schechter. Same chiyuv as Rav Schechter. You know, it's the brilliance of the iPhone. One of the you know, the trademarks of Apple, of Steve Jobs, was that it completely wiped out that there's an upper echelon of like phones. So I, Leaptag, I'm a nobody, and I have the same phone as LeBron James. Look at that. We share the same phone. That's about all we share. Right? But Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael teaches us that every single one of us, nobody should think, I'm not a gadol, I'm not a tzadikas, I don't have the great this, I don't have the great that. Every single person has the ability to achieve Kedusha. We're running out of time, but as you look through, it's worth on your own, at the Shabbos table even, take out the parasha, take out Kedoshim, and try and understand how all of these laws are different. Like how all these laws fit in and why certain halachos are in certain psukim together. So as the Torah continues, we have the halachos, for example, of gifts to the poor, of what's left over in my field, you know, lechet, shikha, and peya, three things where the person who ran the field was not allowed to take it all in his house and then give it out to the poor. Whether he had to leave a corner or when he was collecting the wheat, he had to, you know, he lived something over or something dropped, he couldn't go back and get it. It's because that realization that we don't own everything. It's not ours. It's not ours. It's not that I get to bring it to my house and I will give out this stuff. It's not mine. It really belongs. It belongs ultimately to God. The parasha continues. It tells us, of course, about pasuk and perek tezayin, pasuk tezayin, yutas tezayin, aloseilech rachil ba'amecha, lo samon odam reyacha ni Hashem. This is the famous pasuk. You should not supposed to speak lashon hara. You know, they say that in ancient Greece. So in ancient Greece, Socrates had this. You know, was said of Socrates that he held knowledge in the highest esteem. So one day he met a great philosopher. Somebody met him and says, "Socrates, do you want to hear what I just heard about your friend? Right? Gossip." So Socrates says, "Hold on a minute. Before telling me anything, you have to pass a little test. I call it the triple filter test," Socrates says. "Well, it's a triple filter test." "That's right," he says. "Before you talk to him about your friend, I want to filter it. That's why I call it, number one, is it truthful? Are you absolutely sure that what you're going to tell me is true?" "No," the man said. I just heard about it." "Okay," says Socrates. "So if you don't know if it's true or not, second filter is goodness. Is what you're going to tell me about this, my friend, is it good or not?" "So on the contrary, how often in your own lives, if someone says, let me tell you something about this guy, he's really nice." That never happens, right? That never, ever, like, that's not usually how it starts. And Socrates says, "So you want to tell me something bad about somebody that you're not sure is true. You may still pass the test, but there's one more filter left," says Socrates. "And that is the filter of usefulness. Is what you're going to tell me useful?" "No," he says, "not really." "Well," says Socrates, "if you want to tell me is neither true nor good or useful, then why tell it to me at all?" And this is Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is the triple filter test. Now you'll notice in this pasuk, there's like three clauses. Not to speak Lashon Hara. Don't stand idly by. And Ani Hashem. So what's the connection? So one answer is found in the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Hamirago bechaveh over below sase," that if a person says Lashon Hara, he's over in a low sase. He shouldn't have said it, right? We know that you say Lashon Hara, it's a problem. You listen to Lashon Hara, it's a problem. Why is listening to Lashon Hara a problem? Because, first of all, I enabled you to say more Lashon Hara. Second of all, because of what you told me, I now have a view of somebody else that might not be accurate. That is ultimately could be damaging. So the Chizkuni and the Rambam both say, not only is it true that Lashon Hara kills someone, but it kills someone's reputation, right? Kills someone's reputation. And Rashi says, look at the social context. If you're hanging around by yourself, it's easier not to talk Lashon Hara. The word lo selich rachil, at one point, that means that, we stop and then Lashon Hara begins. The rachil goes, spread. He's a gossiper. He's a gossip monger. He's walking around sharing Lashon Hara. Don't hang around with them. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. Ibn Ezra says, the last clause in that pasuk of Ani Hashem, Hashem knows our intentions. If I have a group that I know, when I hang out with them, we're just going to share Lashon Hara. We're going to share it. We're going to text it. We're going to post it. And I'm like in this group, like, hey, what do I want to do, God? God says, don't hang out with them. Don't hang out with them. But the Nitziv, now Tully Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he lived in the 1800s. And he was the Rashiv in Volozhin. He gave a shir before davening. So the story goes that it was actually not very highly attended. The Nitziv was one of the greatest achronim. And there was a practice that they studied Chumash every day in Volozhin. And this was the little shir that he gave before davening. But the Nitziv says that if we get so wrapped up in anti-Lashon Hara campaigns, we might not say it when we have to. Sometimes I do need to say something in Lashon Hara. Right, for example, when it comes to Shiduchim, it's a big question. Now, you have to ask the Shaila, shouldn't decide on your own, but I know something. And that's when the Pasuk says, don't say Lashon Hara, lo sam or odam reyacha. But sometimes, not saying Lashon Hara could actually kill somebody. If I knew something and I didn't share it, that's a problem. That's a problem within Halacha. If I know something about a Shidduch, a certain detail, and I know that if I don't, and the Rav says, yeah, you have to share that, and I don't share it, I could be hurting someone. But we all know that Lashon Hara is terrible and it's scary. And according to the Gra, it is the primary reason if you get Olam Haba. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. If you want to look at, am I going to get Olam Haba or not, says the Vilna Gaon, just look at whether or not you spoke Lashon Hara. It's crazy. He says the mashal is of somebody who gets very expensive wine. So he fills up the next 3 days, filling up his barrels with wine. The problem is that there's a hole at the bottom of each barrel. So he says, what do? Our whole lives, mitzvahs, barrels, filling up. But the hole is the Lashon Hara we speak. So after 120 years, we come to Shemayim. And we say, God, and we open the barrel like, where the mitzvahs go? And we realize they all left through the hole of the Lashon Hara. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that every major tragedy in Jewish history is a result of Lashon Hara. Golos Mitzrayim, Yosef's Lashon Hara about the brothers. The Nachash, Lashon Hara about Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu is either Lashon Hara, he spoke, right, with the two Jews, said, are you going to kill us like you did the Egyptian? Or when Moshe speaks Lashon Hara about the Jews themselves. The Meraglim, Lashon Hara. David HaMelech speaks Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth. The Beis HaMikdash, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. So why do we do it? Why is Lashon Hara so difficult? Number one, because we don't see its effect. We are so removed from the effect of Lashon Hara that we don't realize the impact that it makes, the assault that it does. You know, in general, a person hurts somebody else. They, whatever it was they did, they're supposed to go to the kever and ask Lashon Hara. You can rectify most sins. It is very difficult to rectify Lashon Hara. Why is that? How in the world do you know where it went? Try this exercise. Take a picture, send it out online. In 4 days from now, see if you can track down everywhere that picture was sent and delete it. It's almost virtually impossible. That's Lashon Hara. I say something, somebody else spreads the rumor, somebody else says this. And who, you know, Rav Moshe Weinberger in the Five Towns, he says that Jews only tell secrets one Jew at a time. One Jew at a time. What? So if I say Lashon Hara, I said, don't repeat this. And he said, don't repeat this. First of all, that one person I said it to already is Lashon Hara. They have already a bad image in their mind of this person, of what I'm telling them about, even if it's truthful. But Rabbi, it's truth. And it's MS. It's no such thing. No such thing that is truthful. It's not Lashon Hara. I just gave the initials. I didn't tell him who it was. I gave the initials. And I also gave an animal name that rhymes with the last name and their address and the social security number, but I didn't say the name. My speaking of Lashon Hara is the sin. because I am not training myself to be a better person. And we don't realize the impact that it makes. It's damaging. And the worst part of Sfiras HaOmer, I'm sorry, of Lashon Hara, which is where we're working on Sfiras HaOmer, we'll end with this. Lashon Hara is not just in what I say. Lashon Hara is about how I view somebody. It's not just about being mean or derogatory. Do I view you in a positive way or in a negative way? If I want to share Lashon Hara about somebody, whatever, they did this, their kids did that, I am sharing that because I view you in less of a light. That's my fault. That's my issue. It's my sin. Even if the person who I tell Lashon Hara to says, you're out of your mind, there is no way that's true. Even if it's true, I don't believe it. And that I tell somebody Lashon Hara and they go home and they don't believe it in the least. But I sinned because I didn't view you in the best possible light. Do I know who you are? Do I understand, you know, your situation, your life, your circumstance, what you're going through or what? Absolutely not. The same way you don't want anybody to judge you, anybody to judge me, nobody should judge you. And that's Lashon Hara. Sfiras HaOmer, when we focus on the words that we use and how we talk as a Rekiva student, Shlonohagu Kavu Zebazeb, you know, we say every day, Elokai Netzor Lashoni Meira. What does that mean? Meira is, it's tsar, it's to view in a very narrow way. God, protect me, Lashoni Meira, not necessarily bad, but Netzor is, don't help me not view somebody in a narrow light. Let's be the person that can view it with an open mind, understanding, to use our speech as a way of embracing and welcoming and not pushing away. And to think that it's only Lashon Hara if it gets back to that person, we've missed the boat. Lashon Hara is an approach to life. How I view you, how I want to view you, how I want the community to view you, that ultimately we want the best for everyone. We want a community called Adas B'nei Yisrael, everyone together, achieving that Kedusha.